Hello, and thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z brings you the latest information about the world of natural living. And we've been doing that for a lot of years. I actually became a natural healthcare provider in 1964. Yes, that's a six. So it's been more than a minute. And it's been amazing to watch the evolution of natural medicine throughout the years. If you'd like to get in touch, best place to go is to naturalnurse.com. And there, under the calendar, there is a very wide array of classes available for you, many of which are all free. For instance, we have a lecture coming up. There's over 500 people I know that have already signed up, and that is very much on our topic for today. It's called Hemp CBD Endocannabinoids, What's All the Buzz? And that class is 100% free. It's being underwritten by the American Herbalist Guild. And all you have to do is go to naturalnurse.com calendar and look down the list. That one's November 17th. But before that, we have several classes coming up. We have another free, very high-end scientific one on natural remedies for sexual wellness. And you can click on that and sign up. And then we have several that have CE credits. The classes that have CE credits for nurses, massage therapists, RDs, nutritionists, and acupuncturists, those are not free necessarily, but very, very low cost. And those have certifications, although you can take the class even if you don't need the certification. So we have one coming up on opioids, natural pain relief that you can use instead of opioids, to a very, very wide array. We also have a lot of classes for those individuals who, let's say, are thinking about starting selling natural products. Then we have a class called Herbal Manufacturing, Legal Considerations. Know before you go, because if you do something that is not within the law, it's okay if that's how you like to roll. But when you get stopped, you can't say, oh, I didn't know red light means stop and get off. You can't. And it has cost people millions of dollars, as well as their life, pretty much everything taken away. So I would suggest that if you're thinking about doing that, take that class first. It's called Herbal Manufacturing, Legal Considerations. Another class that is very, very popular is one that I run called Career Paths in Natural Health. And that is open to anyone. Very often we have nurses and other healthcare professionals taking that class, and it is open to all. We schedule it individually because even if someone, let's say, is a graphic design artist or whatever your passion is and your talent is in life, you can move into natural as part of your daily existence. And that's what's so exciting. So everyone can move their focus, their professional focus, to a more natural lifestyle. And that's what that class is about. It's called Career Paths in Natural Health. So all of these things are available to you. Just check it out at naturalnurse.com. Today, we have as our guest a nurse, and her name is Vanessa Peck. She calls her, and her practice is Medical Cannabis Nurse for Kids. That's a real specialty. She's a certified cannabis nurse with 12 years of professional nursing practice and has an extensive background in emergency care, trauma, and pediatrics. Vanessa was compelled to advance her career to help educate and guide families through the world of cannabis, and she understands and emphasizes that people feel sometimes at their wit's end because of failed therapies during the most difficult experiences, such as watching their child suffer. So together, Vanessa and families walk hand in hand down the road of natural medical cannabis care, transforming and restoring their child's lives, and also often their own. Her website is elevated-healing.com. That's elevated-healing.com. Thank you so much for being our guest today, Vanessa.
Thank you for having me, Ellen. I'm really excited to speak with you.
Now, we're going to go back in time because let's talk about why you became a nurse in the first place.
Yeah, so nursing was actually a second career for me. I knew I always wanted to help people. I was just trying to figure that out in my early 20s. You know, after going to college, I actually had a business degree originally. And then when I got out of college, you know, I had a couple of jobs, just wasn't really exciting me, wasn't really my passion. I actually had gotten into dietetics. I was in grad school to be a dietitian at the time and was also doing personal training while working full time. And then one of my family members had a really terrible accident and was in the intensive care unit for a period of time and rehab, and seeing what all the nurses and physicians had done for my family member, I was just completely in awe of it and what they were doing, because it was such a difficult time for my family and I, and what they were doing for my family member and what they were doing for my family. I was just astounded by it. And it really struck a chord with me. And I thought, you know, maybe I want to be a nurse. And I started exploring some accelerated programs since I already had a bachelor's and started applying to programs, got in, quit my job, like took a big risk, quit my job. And it's been my journey since. So since then, I've been an ER nurse working ER, pediatrics, adult, and trauma for the last 12 years. And then I had an experience a couple of years ago when I was working the pediatric ER where I had an autistic patient, and there was a possibility that the patient was going to be admitted, and we had notified mom about this. And mom had stated, you know, if he finds out that he's going to be admitted, he may get pretty upset and may have a quote unquote meltdown type situation. So we were all kind of prepared for it, hoping for the best. And unfortunately, he didn't end up being admitted. And when mom had let him know that he was going to stay overnight, he did get pretty upset. And at that time, the ER physician had pulled me aside and said that she had ordered IV Ativan for the patient to help calm him down if needed. And I let mom know this, and mom said, that's fine, we'll hold it for now. But in the meantime, I would just like to give him his CBD. And, you know, at that time, I was still pretty naive to all the information in terms of cannabis, CBD, and being utilized for certain conditions. And I let the ER doctor know that's what mom wanted to do. And ER doctor was fine with that. And mom had said, usually he responds very well to his medication, so let's just give it a little bit of time, 20 minutes or so. So I went about doing my business and continued taking care of my patients. And I would say about 25 minutes later, I approached the patient's room to see how he was doing. And before I even got into the room, I was just amazed by how quiet it was. And when I walked in, there he was lying in bed, laughing, watching TV, laughing with his parents. And I think mom could see it all over my face that I was just amazed by what I was seeing. And from there, we had gotten into a conversation how she started her child on CBD, what the effects have been, that he was no longer on his medications. And she said that, you know, I have a whole different child here. He's more himself than I've ever known him to be. We've had a lot of failed treatments, conventional treatments, where we've just been on multiple medications where they worked minimally, but then they had side effects, and then it was more medications for the side effects, or we would try another medication and it wouldn't work at all, or it would put them into these rages that just wasn't their child. And they really had gone through the ringer, and mom had done some research and heard about CBD and decided to try it. And she said, it's been a lifesaver, and it's just really given her child and their whole family a different life. So that's really what my journey's been. And since then, I've done research about cannabis, and then I really just decided this is the route that I wanted to go. Working in the ER, you know, you see conventional medicine work at its best, but you also see conventional medicine fail a lot of people. So to have this option and to be able to educate people about cannabis medicine, why it works, how it works, and the science behind it and the evidence behind it, is really, truly my passion and something that I want to help as many families and children as possible, you know, as I possibly can.
Isn't that a wonderful story? And, you know, really pretty common. For instance, my own daughter, she actually has a medical marijuana license in Florida. And unfortunately, she's rather ill, and she was in an assisted living facility. And they would not let her use it because they had this big fear about it that was something like, you know, reefer madness days.
Yeah.
So there's a lot still of you know, incorrect belief. She actually had to leave and go to a different facility that would, I mean, it's totally legal now, which is amazing also.
Right. Right. And I think you see a lot of that still, just that stigma that still exists around it, even though polls are showing across the U.S. that more people want it legalized and they want more access to it. Even though you're seeing that, you're still seeing the other side of it where there's, like you said, the quote unquote reefer madness stigma around it that still is difficult to try to break those barriers down. But it's so important that all of us that are in this industry, that are the proponents behind it, we need to continue getting the word out there and educating people with the appropriate information, and get away from the misinformation. So this way we can really propel this movement forward, because this is something that everybody should have access to because of the wonders that it can do for so many ailments out there, and even for wellness and prevention in many cases.
That's true. And it is interesting because actually, if we go back in time, hemp and marijuana, what's the difference anyway? You know, when we throw around those words, like I said, I'm teaching a free class. Anyone can take it at naturalnurse.com. Go under calendar. And it's really about, you know, the wide use of all these words like hemp, marijuana, CBD, what's all the buzz? That's actually the name of the class. But why don't you answer that question for us, since you are certainly an expert in the topic, Vanessa?
Sure. So the difference really comes down to the content of the plant. So when we talk about the marijuana plant, we're talking about it containing higher levels of THC. And there's CBD also in the marijuana plant. Just over time, the history has been people have really bred, anybody who's cultivated marijuana have really bred CBD out of it. CBD has always been there, but they've bred the CBD out of it to gain higher levels of THC, more for the recreational use of it. But with hemp, there still can be THC in it, but it's less than 0.3%. So what that would mean is people are not going to get that quote unquote psychoactive effect, that high that everybody's concerned about when they're consuming products that may have CBD. But with both of these plants, we have high cannabinoid profiles. So it's not just when we talk about marijuana and the hemp plant, there's so many constituents in it that people don't realize. People just think that there's just THC, I'm going to take it and I'm going to get high. But there's also CBD that people are still learning about and what it does. But there's also so many other compounds and cannabinoids that people don't realize are in there, such as CBN, CBG. There's the acids, the CBDA, also with THC, THCA. And all of these constituents have different effects. The difference really is THC content. So in your marijuana plant, you're going to have higher levels of THC, whereas the hemp, you're going to have the less than 0.3% and not get that high effect that a lot of people are concerned about getting.
And this is not new. For instance, any of you who might live on Long Island, New York, I know we have a big listener constituency there for this show, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, although we are listened to, really, we have listeners all over the world, which is just amazing. By the way, we love to hear from you. But if you live in Long Island, there's a place to call Hempstead that's called Hempstead. And all of you are probably familiar with that. And Hempstead is this huge area right in the middle of Long Island that was used to grow hemp. So this is not new in the United States.
No, not at all. And even if you look at the history, I mean, we had cultivated hemp for textiles and many other reasons. So, I mean, hemp's been around for a very long time. And then, you know, we went through the whole reefer madness and now it was taken away. And now finally, after the agricultural bill, the farm bill, we finally have it back in play because it has such great benefits. And this is what people need to know. We need to destroy this mindset that we have of reefer madness, because that's not what it's about. And being in this space and having the ability to educate people and get more medical professionals and other people that are just in the cannabis industry to educate the public appropriately, we got to continue to break down these barriers, because everybody deserves access to this plant that can really do wonders for a lot of people out there.
It's pretty amazing, as are many natural therapeutics versus pharmaceutical therapeutics. But when we're talking about pharmaceutical therapeutics and we're talking about CBD, there actually is, and many people don't know this, a drug, an FDA-approved drug called Epidiolex, that is very specific. It is medicinal cannabidiol. Is a CBD product, and it's actually also a pharmaceutical drug. So how do they explain that?
I know. I just had this conversation with somebody the other day, how we have, like you said, Epidiolex, which is synthetic CBD, and that is a Schedule 3 drug, but somehow marijuana remains a Schedule 1 drug, but yet we're using constituents in a synthetic way to give to children who suffer from a severe form of epilepsy and nothing else works. But the synthetic form of CBD that's created by a pharmaceutical company is what's used. And we even have synthetic forms of THC to help with chemotherapy patients who are experiencing severe bouts of nausea and having problems with appetite, and that's Dravenol. So here we have these two synthetic forms of THC and CBD that are Schedule 3 drugs, and we can sell them to the public and help people that way, but yet marijuana remains a Schedule 1 drug. It really just does not make any sense.
So true. And again, I imagine it has to do with the pharmaceutical industry, especially in this country, wanting to be really the control valve for anything that's considered medicinal.
Yes, I agree with that.
Now, also, if you look at that particular product that you just mentioned, which is FDA approved, as you said, it is a synthetic compound, and it does not have what you just shared with us, Vanessa, which is that wide range of all different kinds of components produced by nature that have something that we can call an entourage effect, where mm-hmm. they work all together. And also, each of those has a different kind of receptor site that they naturally attach to in the body. So some are very helpful for anxiety. Others are very helpful for pain. Others have an effect on inflammation. But you don't get that when you're using a synthetic isolate. And in fact, there are several really well-done studies showing something interesting. When you take just the isolate, there's a phenomena where if you take more, you get a stronger effect, but that effect becomes bell-shaped, which means beyond a certain amount with the isolate, the positive effects actually diminish. Well, that's not true with the full spectrum kind of extract, only with the isolate.
Exactly. And that's why when it comes to treating people or suggesting to people, you really want them to take the whole plant, meaning, like you said, a full spectrum where you're getting a combination of what is contained in that plant. So the variety of cannabinoids, whether it be CBD, CBD, CBN, CBG, CBDA, all of them have different effects. And then also the terpenes on top of it. And terpenes are what, you know, they're the aromas of the plant, the essential oils for a lack of better terms, that really have these properties that people just don't even realize even exist. And when working in combination with all these cannabinoids, really have great effects, whether it's pain relief, reducing inflammation, improving the immune system, helping reduce seizures. It's really miraculous what it can do for some people.
So something that's very, very interesting, perhaps you can share with us, Vanessa, is the idea of the endocannabinoid system, because while all this kind of plant, be it hemp or what used to be called marijuana, all of those plants have been used throughout human history medicinally, but it's really only starting in the 1980s, which is what, it's only like 40 years ago. I've been doing this since 1964, so long before that they started to discover something called the endocannabinoid system. What is the endocannabinoid system about?
Yeah, so it's a system within our bodies that, like you said, was discovered just 40 years ago, a little over 40 years ago at this point, that we have the system within our bodies that is this massive chemical messaging system that really strikes or tries to achieve internal balance, or what we would call homeostasis, with all our other systems, whether it be our cardiovascular system, our immune system, our gastrointestinal system, everything. So it really helps make sure that all these messages that are being sent between all our cells are the right messages. And if they're not, this system is trying to correct these messages so that we have the correct balance and everything's functioning in harmony and in a balanced way. But when there is chronic illness or a presentation of illness, the thought is that we could be deficient of these cannabinoids. And these cannabinoids are actually, we create natural forms of THC and CBD, really. We have receptors and these cannabinoids within our own body. So we actually create them within internally already. But if we're either deficient of one or deficient of the other or both, we can find ourselves in a disease state. However, we're still trying to figure out, is it the chicken or the egg first? You know, sometimes somebody's endocannabinoid system can be within balance, but with a chronic illness over time, it has been found that these endogenous cannabinoids that we have within us, they can become depleted due to the stress or the inflammation or the infection within our body that we're just having over time here that just continues to go on. Or some people we find are already deficient of these natural internal cannabinoids that is creating illness. But we find that people with chronic illnesses like fibromyalgia that tend to be resistant from conventional treatment, migraines and irritable bowel syndrome, for example, they sometimes tend to be resistant to conventional treatment. But we have found that when we introduce the phytocannabinoids, meaning the cannabinoids from the cannabis plant, that being CBD, sometimes in some cases THC, some people benefit, and the whole terpene profile, the whole plant, we find that these people are responding very well. So in the case of fibromyalgia, we'll see reduced pain. And people with chronic migraines that tend to be resistant from conventional treatment, we see, relief from these migraines, and some people not even experiencing migraines again. Irritable bowel syndrome, we're seeing people being, to them, they feel that they're cured, but really it's just the body is now restoring internal balance again. And we're seeing a lot of people experiencing relief.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. Thank you for sharing all that. And that's a lot of information you just shared. But in a nutshell, what this research has found is that this system is a naturally occurring system in our body already. There are endocannabinoid receptors, which means little special places that these molecules, known as endocannabinoids, can fit into. In addition, our body, if everything is working right, and it also depends on an individual and genetics and all that, actually manufactures our own endocannabinoids. Is called endogenous endocannabinoids. And like Vanessa just explained, sometimes there's a deficiency or an imbalance that occurs with that endogenous, means self-regulated and self-produced system. And that's where using exogenous cannabinoids, such as through the use of hemp or raw hemp extracts or full spectrum hemp extracts or broad spectrum hemp extracts, you know, that's another whole discussion, can fill those receptor sites and bring someone back into balance. And the experiential part of that is things like anxiety and pain and sleep, things people really can relate to. And, you know, in terms of the development of those pharmaceutical drugs, Vanessa, I believe most of that was done mostly with seizure activity in children. And, you know, we have to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Nurse Vanessa Peck, the certified cannabis nurse. And you can find her at elevated-healing.com. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the nutrient known as taurine.
Amino acids are chemical constituents that form the building blocks of protein in the body. The official definition of an amino acid is a compound which contains an amino group and a carboxylic acid. Taurine contains a sulfonic group instead, so is not a true amino acid, although it is often referred to as one. The intracellular concentration of taurine is 10 times that of any normal free amino acid.
Taurine was discovered in 1827, but the significance of taurine in nutrition was not realized until 1975, when the journal Science published a study showing that taurine-deficient cats suffered from retinal degeneration. In 1986, the Annual Review of Biochemistry reported that the amount of taurine present in mammalian milk depends on the species. Natural human mother's milk is rich in taurine, but cow's milk, except for the early milk known as colostrum, is taurine deficient. Pediatrics Journal in 1983 printed a study which outlined several of the biologically significant functions of taurine, and an effort was then made to fortify infant formula by adding taurine.
Some species of animals, such as cats, cannot synthesize taurine within their bodies, and so must receive it through their diets. Humans have a very limited ability to synthesize taurine, so adequate intake through diet and supplementation is important. The principal source of dietary taurine is meat of various types and shellfish. Even people ingesting sufficiently high levels of taurine may develop a deficiency due to the overgrowth of certain anaerobic intestinal microorganisms which consume taurine. Certain prescription drugs are known inhibitors of taurine uptake.
The Journal of Neurochemistry published a study in 1975 which showed that taurine concentrations are extremely high in the retina. In fact, the retina contains two binding proteins specific for taurine. Research has yet to determine exactly how taurine functions in the eye, but deficiency of taurine has been found to lead to the degeneration of photoreceptor cells. Continued studies on taurine have linked its presence to several biological functions, besides being a protector of the delicate tissues of the eye. Taurine helps to neutralize oxidizing agents caused by ionizing radiation. Taurine is present in high concentrations in the normal heart. It stimulates white blood cell motility and protects cell membranes from free radical damage. Taurine has proven useful in epileptics to reduce or control seizures. It helps modulate the transport of substances such as sodium, potassium, magnesium, copper, and iron across cell membranes. Additional research supports taurine's role in preventing gallstones.
So, as you can see, the nutrient taurine may be an important addition to your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com. Check out calendar to join us in our many up-and-coming classes, or listen to our podcasts, or check out our articles. All that is free at naturalnurse.com. And you can also find us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Today, our guest is Vanessa Peck, and she is a certified cannabis nurse. And there's a wonderful organization called the American Cannabis Nurses Association, which I believe, Vanessa, you belong to as well. And
yes.
Really has some, you know, a great look at how respected that is if already an organization of nurses is deeply investigating the therapeutic validity. So someone like yourself has really chosen to specialize in kids. Now, do you think you get additional pushback because of that?
I definitely do, and I can understand that. Parents are often trepidous, but they're also at their wit's end, and that's why they're exploring cannabis as a possible alternative option, where, you know, they've been through the ringer in terms of conventional treatments, and they've just had one failed conventional treatment after failed conventional treatment, and they're just really trying to find some relief for their child, whether it be a child with autism spectrum disorder, just having self-injurious behaviors or very bad OCD, or a child with treatment-resistant epilepsy, and many other situations where these parents are just, they just really want to find relief. Do I get pushback? 100%, because they're unsure about it. And a lot of these parents who have chronically ill children, they're very educated on what is out there. They're doing their research. But even though they're doing their research, there's a lot of information. And sometimes with CBD or cannabis in general, you know, there's a lot of misinformation, or there's just too much information. You're trying to sift through what's the good information versus what's the bad information. And then it's, well, what product do I choose? What works? What's the dose? How do I give it? And I think this is where parents are trepidous and the stigma around it. Well, what if I give something to my child, my child's just going to be high. So there's a lack of education. And if parents are willing to hear the education, hear the science and evidence behind it, this is when, you know, you kind of have meeting of the minds, and then they're willing to push forward and try it. But at first, yes, there's definitely pushback, and that's understandable. It's their child, and there's the stigma and the, you know, trying to sift through the misinformation versus the correct scientific evidence-based information.
This is true. And that's why it's so wonderful and supportive to have someone like yourself, who's a trained RN, be in charge of deciding, like, the dose, which kind, all those kinds of things for that specific child. And how would you do that? Like, let's say a parent decides, you know what, I'm going to give this a try. How would you decide which application would be the best for that child? Obviously, we're not going to want them smoking it.
No. So, yeah, and I make, of course, and I really make this a collaborative effort between the parents and I, because I want the parents to be as involved in as possible. You know, when you have a very ill child, I think a lot of your life tends to feel out of control. You just, and as a parent, you want to have that control, because you don't want to watch your child suffer at all. It's the worst possible feeling that a parent can have. So to have a parent work with me while I'm educating them, and then discussing, you know, what kind of compounds we can use, what kind of treatment and the way we can give it, you know, we work together to try to figure that out. And there's a lot of education, of course, and there's things that I suggest. But in terms of how we give it, what are the symptoms that we're even trying to quell in the first place? And from there, you know, we go down the list of cannabinoids and what they do. And, you know, some of these kids are really good. Unfortunately, a lot of them are on a lot of medications, and some of them are already swallowing capsules. So that's always a route. A lot of them, you know, don't do well with swallowing capsules based on age or just the inability to do it. So then we talk about tinctures and being able to, you know, some of them will do well and hold it under their tongue, but they have to do that for a period of time, and that can be very difficult for a lot of kids. But then you suggest, well, you can put it in their juice, you can put it in their yogurt, something that they're going to be eating. So by trying to figure out, working with mom and dad who knows their child so well, and then in combination with my education and my, what I know about it as a somebody in the field that understands this, we can have a meeting of the minds and work together, figuring out what's going to be the best in terms of compounds, what's going to be the best route, and we really go from there. So the approach, I like to make it more of a collaborative effort.
Oh, that's so true. And that's where you can be of such guidance. Now, here's a confusing question, not for you, of course, but maybe for some of our listeners. What is the difference between hemp and a product that's high in THC in terms of legality and ability to just go out and pick it up?
Right. So with hemp, there's either they fully extract the THC out of it, or there's less than 0.3%. So legality wise, as long as there's less than 0.3% in the product, then it's legal. Anything greater than 0.3%, that's when we start running into the legality issues. And that depends on states as well. You know, is medical marijuana, you know, legal in certain states? Do they have a card? And that's something that we talk about as well. If we think that THC...
Wait, I want to go into that. So sure. Let's slow down and talk about that. Oh, okay, sure. So what Vanessa just shared with us, listeners, is that depending on the state you live in, and we actually reach every state in the United States and many other countries on this show, so you do have to check into your state legality issues. I have homes in Florida and in New York. In both of those states, people can actually see certain physicians who do a history and physical and evaluation, and then there's money involved, and you actually do get access to what's called a license to purchase full, and they don't always call it marijuana, but the one that has THC. And then there are certain stores called legal dispensaries, which are really the only places you can purchase these items. But I find, Vanessa, and I'd like your opinion, that if somebody does go through that, they really have access to some very high quality products.
Oh, yes, I agree. And sometimes we need to be careful, too, with the high quality products, you know, how much THC is in there. And if we want, you know, if a patient is going to be on THC in combination with a full spectrum CBD product, you know, we need to be careful with how much THC content is in there. Because if we're trying to get the benefits of THC without the psychoactive effect, then we need to work on the dosing, because some people may not know and some people may know, but CBD is actually the antidote for that psychoactive effect of THC. So in other words, if we want the benefits of THC, but we don't want the high, then we need to give a certain amount of CBD to prevent that high feeling, but yet get the THC benefits to help quell some of the symptoms we're looking to quell, whether it's behavioral issues or anxiety, pain, and amongst other things. So this is something that needs to be considered, but there's definitely very high end products in those
right.
dispensaries.
Right. Now that is for someone who goes through that process, is working, you know, hopefully with someone like yourself, you know, and we're talking today to our guest, Vanessa Peck. She is an RN. She is a certified cannabis nurse, and you can find her for more recommendations at her website, which is elevated-healing.com. That's a good place to track her down. She also has Facebook, elevated-healing, and Instagram, elevated3_healing. But if that's hard to find, just go to the website, so elevated-healing.com. Because it is complicated. You just shared with us what goes on if someone is fortunate enough and also, you know, have enough money, enough to go through the legal process. And that's only in certain states. And then you're getting, you know, very high end, but it may have varying amounts of THC. But more recently, we're talking about just 2018, it kind of broke open this entire bandwagon, because in 2018, the Farm Act actually made it legal all across the United States to sell products that are called hemp, just H-E-M-P. They're not called marijuana. They have the low level to be certified as hemp. They have to have less, as Vanessa has been saying, than 0.3% THC. But that has sort of broken the barriers to regulation to a large extent, because it doesn't have to go through all these licensing and special places that are licensed and registered and inspected to sell it. It's just all over the internet, and there are CBD products that are excellent, and there's a lot that are totally, you know, shall we just say junk.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. And that's why this is another part of education that people don't realize, because you, like you said, it's everywhere. I mean, to the point you can go to your gas station and CBD products, and of course, never consume those CBD products. But as you said there, you have to sift through what is the good product versus what is not the good product. And the way we do that, and some companies are really good at this, is having their products tested prior to putting them on the shelves. And what they produce is what we call a certificate of analysis, or COA for short. And people that go through companies that have really rigorous testing on their products, and you can see exactly how much of, you know, whether it's CBD, CBG, and certain terpenes, how much of each is in there, and to make sure that there's no other byproducts from the processing of the plant are in there, such as, 'cause the way in which they extract these cannabinoids from the hemp plant, the extraction process, depending on what a company is using, can actually sometimes put in some residual byproducts that are bad.
Yeah, those are really good, excellent things to review. Also, what I like to do is I love companies who, whether we like it or not, actually I know that they are paying attention to the regulatory environment rather than just ignoring it. And if that's the case, they will not have on the front of their label CBD. That's another confusion. The best companies who are most strictly paying attention to FDA requirements will know that you cannot have the word CBD on the front of the label. What you should have on the front of the label is hemp, and you might say hemp full spectrum extract. And then on the back, in the supplement facts box, you might be listing a specific amount of the cannabidiols. But the better companies will not be shouting out CBD on the front of the label, because whether or not that makes sense, that is the FDA's rule as of now. And so that's another thing that I use to really look at those best sort of evaluated products. They're not going to be shouting out CBD. They're going to be talking about hemp extract. So that's another thing, you know, if you don't know much, to just kind of evaluate what's going on there. And there's a lot to know. There's really a lot to know. That's why it's great to work with someone who's knowledgeable, such as our guest today, Vanessa Peck, RN, certified cannabis nurse. And you can find her on her website at elevated-healing.com. Now, another thing, Vanessa, you keep throwing out this term, and we haven't investigated it deeply yet, so let's do so. You talked about a lot of the cannabidiols, a whole spectrum of them, but how about these terpenes that you keep bringing up? What does that word mean?
Yeah, so terpenes, they exist in all flowering plants. So it really is the defense mechanism of the plant, but it's also the aromatic oils. It's what gives the plant its taste, its flavor, and its aroma. And they are essential oils. And these terpenes that are found in all these plants, including the cannabis plant, are very powerful. And as we know, anybody who has partaken in using essential oils, you know, such as lavender, any of the citrus oils, they all have these great properties that can be relaxing, pain relief. Well, the same thing is occurring within the cannabis or hemp plant as well, where we have a number of terpenes that, when they work hand in hand with the cannabinoids, they have what you mentioned earlier, this entourage effect, that when everything works hand in hand, it has a greater effect than when they work alone. But these terpenes are very powerful, and they really do benefit, symptom relief even more so than if just, you know, one of these cannabinoids were used in isolation. So they're very powerful, and we love them. And people need to realize that, again, this is not just about CBD and THC when we talk about cannabis. This is about a whole spectrum of constituents.
Well, let's talk about some of the specific terpenes and their actions and what other plants they might be found in.
Yeah, so there's several terpenes we have. There's myrcene, there's linalool, there's limonene, there's pinene, and a lot of these terpenes have some anti-anxiety effects. They have anti-inflammation effects, so people who are having a lot of pain, they help out with a lot as well. And they help with depression. Some of them even help with they're anti-proliferative, which is just a fancy word for preventing the proliferation or the growth of cancer cells or tumor cells. So these terpenes are very powerful, and a lot of them have a citrus type aroma to them, or pine, like pinene is a very strong pine smell. And just how they work hand in hand with the cannabinoids alone really can have this really proliferative effect.
Yeah, it's really great because, you know, and other plants, by the way, even have cannabinoids besides this particular plant. Like, for instance, echinacea. A lot of people don't know that, but echinacea has chemical structures that are very similar to cannabinoids and do fit into several of the cannabinoid receptors, particularly the ones that affect immune function. And so many people, even mainstream people, are able to recognize that echinacea is something that really supports immune health. And that's one of the mechanisms that it does that, is because of being able to access these endocannabinoid receptors, particularly in the immune system. Another plant that also has these structures is cocoa, which, you know, cacao, right? Which is the plant that we glean chocolate from. And many people know that chocolate, well, me, I don't like chocolate, which is great. One less thing to have an argument with myself about. But it is certainly something that can bring down stress, that releases endorphins and makes people have like sort of a pleasurable sensation. So many people, not me, but others. And it, again, is linked to that same endocannabinoid system.
Yeah, that's very true. And you can even, you know, argue that there are certain foods, even they help promote the support of the endocannabinoid system, that when you consume these other plants that contain cannabinoids or cannabis itself, it actually will help improve the effects of the cannabis, because you just have, you're supporting the entire body, whether it's through natural foods or even these other plants that you talk about that have cannabinoids and terpenes as well.
That's so true. Now, in terms of the word marijuana, you know, in my research and in your research, I have recently come across things saying that the word marijuana shouldn't be used anymore because it's like a racist term somehow. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think I've been trying to steer away from using it. I still use it from time to time. I have a couple of times on the show here as well. But I think because the stigma that has been developed around the word marijuana, I kind of agree that maybe steering away from it, just because it seems to have this bad connotation. It shouldn't, but it's been developed that way, and it's been developed that way for a very long time, that I think people still can't wrap their mind around viewing it differently. So by using the term cannabis, and it just seems more encompassing because it's not just talking about THC or how people view marijuana, but also is talking about all these other cannabinoids and terpenes and flavonoids. There's so many different parts to this plant besides THC.
So what I'm confused about is the same plant, which is cannabis sativa, and also other species such as cannabis indica. Looks exactly the same, grows very similarly. I myself have been involved in growing massive amounts since 1964, long before the licensing, by the way. But So how do we differentiate in language? Because when we're talking now, you know, there are certainly slide decks I've developed and you've probably developed where you show that same very distinctive plant and then you split it up and you go, okay, so the one that is called hemp has this very low amount of THC and the one that's called marijuana has that more substantial level of THC. So what do we call that one now if marijuana is not no longer a cool and groovy term?
I still been referring all of it as cannabis. And I know a lot of other individuals in this realm have also been just referring to all of it as cannabis as well.
Okay. So how do we differentiate it then from the hemp plant versus the one that is high in I'm not saying you should know. I'm questioning it too. What do we use now as language to differentiate the cannabis that is higher in THC and the cannabis that is lower, which is now called hemp.
Right. Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people are probably struggling with. And that's why, you know, as you're referring hemp as the one that's has the lower level of THC, and we're still calling marijuana the one with the higher level of THC. But I think that's something that a lot of us are probably struggling with, how to really label this what this is, but
right. So when you've come up with a good term, let me know, you know, so
yeah.
We can kind of be clear across the board. Cause to me it's historically, it's certainly marijuana. Marijuana is the one that people use to get high. They like the THC content and still do. That's why people go through the whole process of getting licensed, paying all that money to go to a doctor, get a prescription and a license and purchase at a verified legal dispensary. They also often go through that process because the one that is very low in THC, they can easily buy right off the shelf, hopefully a good quality, anywhere. So it's just a confusing issue. You know, how do we describe those two different focuses?
I agree. And the fact that we're having difficulty with this confusing issue, it just makes it makes you realize how confusing it can be for the, you know, public who's also trying to differentiate what is the difference. So I think we're all struggling with the terms, but, you know, hopefully down the line we figure out what we're going to label everything as just one term and all the benefits of what it can do.
Yeah, that would be clearer because I haven't found that answer yet. That's why I'm asking you, because you are both a health professional and a specialist, and then you have further specialized with the use of cannabis for children, which is, you know, really an amazing focus. And truthfully, the medical focus, because as we discussed a little bit, that FDA approved drug was actually invented specifically for children that had seizure activity.
Yes, those with very treatment-resistant epilepsy, that's a very severe form of epilepsy. That's why that Epidiolex was created in the first place.
Yeah, so you know, it's really an interesting crossing over from mainstream to something that might be called more natural healthcare, and yet it spans both of those genre really well. And how do people, let's give an example of one child who you worked with. I know you talked about one before, but let's share another specific case.
Yeah, sure. So I've had a case where had a child with autism spectrum disorder, and as we know, the spectrum, you know, that's why it's a spectrum, you know, we have varying degrees of it, and had a child where self-injurious behaviors were very significant to the point where parents just couldn't figure out how to calm the child down, and were getting very concerned. They said it was getting to a point where they were getting scared for their child, watching some of the behaviors that would last not minutes, but for hours. And we went through the entire process working together, talking about what compounds could potentially work, started with a full spectrum CBD, worked for a short extent, even with titrating. So what we do too is we start low, go slow. So we start at a low dose and slowly titrate from there to find the minimal dose that we know to alleviate these symptoms. So for a short period of time, we saw the self-injurious behaviors improve, but then they started to pick up again. This is when we discussed, and they did live in a state where medical marijuana was legal. So, and they had a medical card because he was having issues with anxiety, which is a qualifying condition for it, particularly in their state, for medical marijuana. So we did add a little bit of THC. Parents had found a strain that worked for their child. So with a small dose of THC on top of that CBD dose that we had, parents saw what they thought in their mind, it was a miracle. And, you know, and this plant does have miraculous effects for some. And so now the self-injurious behaviors that this child was experiencing every day for hours at a time now were pretty much null. There was nothing. And the parents were just elated with the fact that they felt like they were seeing their child for the first time, that the person that had always been in there was finally came to light. And for these parents and this child, this was everything. And their quality of life, the child's quality of life improved, the parents' quality of life improved, the whole family together, they just felt like they were in a spot where they always imagined being, but never thought that it could actually be a reality. And in this case, it was. So that was to see that I had the opportunity and the privilege to help a family in that way was, I'm like, this is why I'm doing this. I want to help as many children and parents as I can, show that, you know, they don't have to keep experiencing failed conventional treatments. They don't have to feel like they're at their wit's end, that there is an answer. Is it an answer for everyone? No. Is it a cure? No. But what it is a tool that allows parents to add to their arsenal of options and tools that they already have to provide some relief to their child and improve the quality of life for everyone.
Well, thank you so much for that closing statement. We've been talking with nurse and certified cannabis nurse, Vanessa Peck, and you can find out more about her at elevated-healing.com. And this is your host, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. We love to hear from you. Get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. The show's been here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And thank you so much for listening. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.